Welcome back. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, in for Kojo Namdi. Washington is a capital, but few call it a fashion capital. Natives and newcomers often make fun of their own supposed lack of fashion sense, equating the, quote, Washington look with the dull, interchangeable suits worn by legions of workers to their government jobs. But is that all there is to D.C. fashion? Our guests today offer a different perspective on what people in the Washington region are not only wearing, but designing and creating. Joining us to discuss is Robin Givhan. She's the Pulitzer Prize-winning fashion critic for The Washington Post. She joins us by phone. Hi, Robin.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. Michaela Lafrak is the arts and culture reporter at WAMU and the host of its What's With Washington podcast. The episode released today looks into Washington's fashion scene. Welcome back, Michaela.
Hey, Sasha.
Julia Ravindran is a professor in the fashion design and merchandising department at Marymount University. Hi, Julia.
Hi.
And Mimi Miller is the founder of Mimi Miller Women's Wear. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Robin, I'll start with you. Does Washington really have such a terrible reputation when it comes to fashion? Give it to us straight.
Well, I don't think it necessarily has a worse reputation than any other major city in the U.S., aside, obviously, from New York and L.A. But I do think that there are a lot of people who have not visited the Washington region in, say, the last decade. And their impressions of the city are formed almost exclusively by what they see on C-SPAN.
Oh, we'll tap into more of that later. You do say that you've noticed that Washingtonians suffer from a terrible insecurity about fashion. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I grew up in Detroit, and I have lived in San Francisco, and I've lived in New York as well. And I'm just really struck by the incredible sense of insecurity and tendency to compare itself to other cities that happens in Washington that I didn't see or hear elsewhere. And I'm not quite sure why that is. I think it's happens less now than it did when I first moved here. But there is an insecurity, and I don't really think there's any reason for Washington to be insecure about its, you know, place in the style universe.
Michaela, the D.C. fashion scene is the topic of this week's What's With Washington podcast, which you host. What did you find in your reporting? What's changing and what hasn't changed?
Well, office culture and Capitol Hill culture, the clothing there never really changes. You know, it's that ill-fitting blue suit with the white collared shirt. It's what you're seeing during the impeachment hearings when you're watching TV. And part of that, there's nothing we can really do anything about. Capitol Hill still has some actual rules about what you can and cannot wear to work there. And you know what? That's fine. But what I do think is changing is that there is this growing fashion industry in Washington. A lot of makers and local designers are getting their clothing out there. And one place you can really see that is in the growth of local boutiques that supply work by local designers. You know, as we move into this world of online shopping, I think there are still people who are looking for that experience of walking into a retail store and seeing something different than what they could just buy in one click online. And I think that's where we're seeing the innovation.
So Washington area designers, up-and-coming designers, they're not necessarily trying to blow up D.C. fashion, but they're reframing it.
Exactly. Yeah, I think there's, you know, there's an understanding that, yes, a lot of us work in offices. We're going to need to look nice. We're going to need to look put together. But there are ways that you can spice that up. Like, Sasha, for example, you're wearing these amazing statement earrings. You're looking cute.
And thanks.
I think that's what a lot of us are trying to do. And, you know, for example, I went into two boutiques during the reporting for this episode, Nubian Human in Anacostia and Shop Made in D.C., their Georgetown location. And both places supplied these amazing, like, statement necklaces, big earrings, yeah. You know, for men, the very colorful sock, you know, things that you can do to say, you know, yes, I'm looking professional, but I also have a personality.
At 26, Mimi, you are relatively new to the fashion industry, and you decided to base your line of clothing out of your hometown of Manassas. Why did you decide to start your business right there in your own backyard?
I like the area here, and my thought process was, you know, build a consumer base here before expanding out. And like Michaela mentioned, I think we need more of that here in D.C. and more homegrown and local businesses, not just retailers, but also, you know, designers that are actually building their businesses from the ground up in the area.
And you went to school here also. So to what I've been told is the actually one of the only programs in the area that offers bachelor's degrees in fashion design and fashion merchandising. Was Arlington's Marymount University your first choice?
It was not. It was actually my last choice.
Oh, dear.
Yes. So I kind of had to take back what I said originally when we were looking at schools. Both of my parents were police officers in Arlington, and just living so close to the school, I felt there were going to be a lot of eyes, and my parents were, you know, going to be constantly coming down, and that was never the case at all. But then I toured the school and got a scholarship, and I liked it, so I had to take back what I said, and I went to Marymount.
Julia, you're a professor at Marymount in the Fashion Merchandising and Design program. What are your students learning?
So they're learning anything from how to hand sew. They're learning the machines, different machine stitches, and then they're also learning tailoring techniques. They're learning draping, and then in their senior year, they're working on a senior line, and then we produce a fashion show, and we showcase all the student work.
And so you told us a bit, Mimi, about your parents, who are both police officers in Northern Virginia. Tell us a bit more about how your business kind of got off the ground.
A lot of Googling and a lot of support from my parents, both mentally and financially, and then coupled with what I've learned from Marymount and internships that I did after graduation and also during my time in school really helped to prepare me for that. But I, when I graduated, I didn't want to get out of the habit of designing and creating, and so I kind of just really fell into it. It wasn't planned at all. It was always something that I wanted to do later in life. Mm-hmm. I never expected at 26 to be doing this.
It never turns out quite the way you planned,
never.
Does it? Julia, are you seeing a lot of this? Like what kind of jobs are students getting after they graduate? Are they finding work here in this area?
It's a variety. I'm seeing more students staying here, starting their own businesses, working for local boutiques, digital media content strategists for online boutiques. In the area. And then they also are, you know, going to New York City, for example. But what I'm noticing is a lot of my students that graduate and go to New York, a lot of them end up coming back to this region and they start their own business.
Let's go to the phones. We have Josh who's waiting. He's in Northwest DC. Hi, Josh. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I've been in the city for almost 15 years and, in policy jobs in and out of a lot of the three-letter government agencies, and came from the music industry, and I've seen fashion change dramatically in Washington for men over the last kind of 10 or 15 years. Guys are wearing suits that actually fit. People are dressing in a way that doesn't make them feel like they're not serious professionals. They also care about the way that they look. And the one thing that I've seen in the city, though, that hasn't kept pace with the way that people are starting to dress is the available options, specifically for men, to go find cool places that you were describing, these smaller boutiques, to find things that aren't, you know, suit supply one click away. So it would be great to see more designers designing for men as well as women in the city.
Robin, what do you have to say to them? I'm so glad Josh called in because we are all women sitting here having this discussion. So it was really great to hear the men's perspective. What are your thoughts, Robin?
I agree with Josh 1,000%. One of the first stories that I wrote after being sort of away from writing about Washington fashion, because I was working on a book, was about the way that men in Washington were dressing in their tailored suits. And they were really taking a cue from sort of, you know, larger trends, which was the incredible shrinking of men's suits. And I'm really struck by the changes in the way that men are dressing in the city. And I think it reflects the larger fashion industry in that some of the most interesting and transformative work in fashion has been happening on the menswear side. And I think that retail here has yet to really catch up with men's interest, incredibly increased interest in style, and just the enormity of what's now available for men. And that goes so far beyond streetwear.
Right, right. And now, Michaela hinted at this earlier, but you, Robin, have been writing about what some of the participants in the impeachment hearings are wearing. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you've noticed.
Well, you know, I mean, these are, most of them are sort of the behind-the-scene players, you know, the people who are career diplomats, career government employees. And I think that their clothing reflects the fact that they are not the bold-faced names. They are not the principals. You know, they're the people behind the scenes. And I sort of half-jokingly said to, you know, a colleague, I don't think that anyone, you know, wants the U.S. diplomatic corps wearing Rick Owens. I mean, I think that there is a kind of reassurance in, you know, these traditional but well-fitting, thoughtful business suits that both the men and the women wear. And I think they do it with a hint of their own personal flair, but they're still very much within the confines of, I think, fashion as reassuring.
When she was First Lady, Robin, you wrote about the clothing choices of Michelle Obama, who may be as close to a fashion icon as DC's got. You've also written about First Lady Melania Trump, a former fashion model. How did each of them make fashion news?
Well, the most significant thing about Michelle Obama was her broad embrace of the fashion industry, from its most established veteran designers to folks who had been in business for, you know, 2 years and even less. I mean, she really was wide-ranging in her taste and in the designers that she brought into the spotlight. And I think for that reason alone, the fashion industry was extraordinarily enthusiastic about her, because she was so enthusiastic about the industry in turn. I think with the current First Lady, she is much more focused on personal style, and she tends to wear much more established designers, and she tends to wear, you know, both American and international designers.
You're still writing about Michelle Obama's style, so how has it changed since she left the White House? I know I've noticed a lot more risk-taking. I'm seeing off-the-shoulder tops. I didn't see that before. She had this really great pair of high-waisted Palazzo pants that I just loved, and she wore them twice, which is like such a big no-no. You know, the white denim shorts on vacation. So, like, what else are you seeing, Robin?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I mean, I don't really write about her non-First Lady fashion. I think the last time I did was when she was wearing a pair of over-the-knee. She was wearing Balenciaga at one of the appearances.
Those boots. The boots. How could I forget the boots?
Yeah, I think that was sort of the moment when, you know, people sort of had this sense that now that she was no longer confined by the expectations and traditions of First Ladies, she could wear whatever she wanted to wear. And I think she certainly has done that.
You're listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, WAMU's race and identity reporter, sitting in for Kojo. We'll continue our conversation about DC fashion in a moment. Stay with us.
This month at WAMU, we're lifting our voices to shine a light on Black changemakers throughout American history. Some you know and some you don't, but they all change the world. Go to WAMU.org/lift every voice to learn the stories of these incredible African American changemakers and to hear special interviews spotlighting those who have impacted the arts, sciences, sports, and activism. Go to WAMU.org/lift every voice.
I'm Sasha Ann Simon, sitting in for Kojo Namdi. I'm talking with Robin Givhan. She's the Pulitzer Prize-winning fashion critic for The Washington Post. Michaela LaFrac is the arts and culture reporter at WAMU and the host of its What's With Washington podcast. Julia Ravindran is a professor in the fashion design and merchandising department at Marymount University. And Mimi Miller is the founder of Mimi Miller Women's Wear. Robin, another question for you. You recently wrote a cover story for The Washington Post magazine called The Troubling Ethics of Fashion in the Age of Climate Change. What's so troubling?
Well, it's our massive consumption of clothing and our seemingly insatiable appetite for newness. I mean, one of the, you just mentioned, or someone just mentioned, the idea of Michelle Obama rewearing something. And I'm not quite sure when, wearing something more than once when you're in the public eye became this terrible, terrible faux pas. I'm assuming it happened in the era of Instagram. But that's one of the things that is particularly troubling, this idea that today we consume something like 60%. More clothing. We buy 60% more clothing than we used to. And much of that, people consider to be old after it's been worn once or twice. That's a lot of clothing, a lot of fast fashion that's going directly into landfills.
Michaela,
and that's a problem, regardless of how it's made.
And what about thrift stores, Michaela, and resale shops as a way to be kinder to the environment? What does the Washington area actually have to offer?
Sure. Well, we do have a lot of great thrift stores. My favorite is Frugalista in Mount Pleasant. A lot of people here at WAMU are obsessed with the Value Village chain. There's a bunch of them in the area. But one other thing I wanted to add in response to Robin's comment is that what I was seeing in a lot of these small boutiques is a lot of local designers are really taking on this issue of fast fashion in the materials that they're using. So I saw I'm forgetting the name of the designer, but he makes accessories for men, mostly belts made out of old bike parts, bike tubes. A lot of people using recycled fabrics. And one of the designers actually that I learned about from the Nubian Human Boutique in Anacostia was in the process of suing the retail chain Zara for copying the patterns that he was using for men's socks. So it is a
wow.
big issue for designers that are right here in DC.
Mimi, you're very environmentally conscious with your clothing line. Why is it important to you?
With my designs, I don't want to pollute the environment, even more. If anything, I want to take steps to, kind of change that and help remove any pollution that, has already been created. I don't want to add to that. So with that, I design and produce in smaller batches. So there's less inventory left over at the end of the seasons. Really conscious about the fabrics that I use and using natural fibers and things that are, can either compost down or are biodegradable as opposed to synthetic fabrics like polyester.
Do your ethics also extend to the people making your designs?
Oh, for sure. Yes. I always say I don't want to exploit anyone to make a profit. So it's very important to me that the people who are making my garments are being paid fairly and working in the right conditions and getting what they deserve.
Let's jump to the phone lines. We've got Calvin from Silver Spring. Hi, Calvin.
Hi. How you doing?
Good, good. What's your question or comment?
I have a question for Robin. First of all, I enjoy reading your columns. They're very good. I just have to have a dictionary nearby when I read it occasionally.
Thank
you. The question I have is that in the HBCUs, historically black universities, the African Americans historically are very fashion conscious. And I'm just curious as to why there aren't that many programs, if any, relating to fashion design and merchandising at these schools.
Robin?
It's a good question. I don't know that I have a definitive answer. I would say that, interestingly, in conversations with professors at Parsons and at FIT, one of the things that they have often lamented is the lack of black students enrolling in design programs, whether it's there or whether it's at the Rhode Island School of Design or, you know, at a Howard or a Spelman or Morehouse. And part of that seems to be that often they're sort of discouraged from going that route because they're often discouraged from embracing creative careers because they can be more challenging, because there's often not a clear route to success. There's not a clear path to the ultimate goal. And so I don't know if that has something to do with it. And I think, you know, historically, a lot of the HBCUs were more focused on, you know, professional programs in medicine and law, because, you know, their students were prohibited from pursuing those professions at majority white schools.
I would also note that that Howard University here has a concentration in fashion design. It's not the fully built out program that Marymount has, but they do have a design program there.
Yeah. And Julia, let's talk about what you're seeing folks in the Washington area wear right now. Have any trends caught your eye?
I mean, the athleisure wear is everywhere.
Athleisure. Yeah. I love that term.
Everyone wants to be comfortable. The Sherpa coats are also a huge trend this year. I mean, I'm surrounded by students, so it's definitely a different age demographic than myself.
A lot of puffy coats.
A lot of puffy coats, mm-hmm. A lot of crop tops.
I just bought one.
I mean, they're comfortable, what can you say? But as we discussed earlier, I think also in the D.C. area in general, you're seeing a lot more fitted suits. Maybe not so much like the white collar, the fitted suit. But you're also seeing, like, more interesting blouses underneath the suit. Like, I'm wearing, you know, a tied blouse. I prefer to have some kind of statement piece underneath a blazer if I'm going to wear that.
Right.
You're also seeing a lot of the kitten heel boots, snake skin, reptile skin is also really
kitten heel boots are trends. Back?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let's take another phone call here. Hannah's on the line, also from Silver Spring. Hi, Hannah.
Hi. I heard you talking about fast fashion earlier, and that's something I really struggle with as the mom of a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old, because kids need new clothes all the time. And so I made it my goal this year not to buy anything new for them. And we're almost at the end of the year, and I haven't had to buy a single new item for them. I've gotten all of their clothing from Kid to Kid in Rockville or the various Value Village stores. They're so amazing. Salvation Army family stores. And these clothes are all practically brand new because kids only wear them for a few months before they're too big for them.
Such a good idea, Hannah. So many secondhand stores with really quality stuff, too. And I can relate to the mom factor, because they grow out of things so quickly. And it's like, to spend so much on new clothes, and in 2 seconds, they can't fit.
And I would also say we here at WAMU, Sasha, as you know, recently did a clothing swap.
Yes.
Which was so much fun. I mean, maybe, I don't know if that would work for kids' clothes as well, but we all brought in a bunch of trash bags full of our old clothes
and yeah.
Swapped them around. And now, you know, I get to see my old blouses on
the We're
on
in
a
heaven.
Yeah. You don't have to say goodbye completely.
Yes, exactly. Isn't that my top you're wearing right now, Michaela?
Maybe.
Speaking of that, are there particularly fashionable places, Michaela, here in the greater Washington area that people should know about?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I would definitely say Howard University. On the What's With Washington podcast episode, we talked to Jonquilyn Hill, who's a producer here at WAMU and also a Howard alum. And she told me all these great stories about, you know, going to just her like 8 a.m. class and, you know, seeing people in these just amazing outfits. She said it's a very fashionable campus. I also went to a runway show at the National Portrait Gallery that was put on by the downtown D.C. Business Improvement District, and like, oh my gosh, the outfits were amazing. People looked great. So I think it's really everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
maybe not Capitol Hill, but pretty much everywhere else.
Right. Mimi, where do you get your clothes just in general?
Yeah. I go to Everlane. I'm I like basics and I like neutrals, and
taking notes.
Yeah.
All right.
And then I wear a lot of my own samples as well. I don't do a whole lot of shopping. But yeah, Everlane is a big place that I usually go to.
What about you, Julia? Where do you get your clothes?
I make a lot of my clothes myself. When I'm not able to make my clothes, I usually shop at Ann Taylor, Madewell.
That's a good one.
If I'm going to buy something, I'm going to keep it in my wardrobe for a very long time. Mm-hmm. I don't really tend to do the fast fashion very often unless, you know, I really need to. But everything that the main staples in my wardrobe, I usually make myself.
Michaela?
Well, I mean,
you kind of gave a bunch of your
secrets.
Yeah,
it's basically your closet.
It's my closet. No.
But I do. I have four older sisters, so I'm very lucky, and I do take borrow a lot of their clothes. But otherwise, my favorite boutiques are two thrift stores here in D.C., Frugalista that I mentioned, and Current Boutique on 14th Street.
Awesome. Robin Givon is the Pulitzer Prize-winning fashion critic for The Washington Post. Michaela LaFrac is the arts and culture reporter at WAMU. Julia Ravindran is a professor in the fashion design and merchandising department at Marymount University. Mimi Miller is the founder of Mimi Miller Womenswear. Thanks so much for joining us. This conversation about DC fashion was produced by Lauren Marco, and our segment about holiday shows was produced by Margaret Barthel. Be sure to catch the latest episode of Michaela LaFrac's What's With Washington podcast to hear more perspectives on fashion in DC. Listen and subscribe to season 2 of the podcast at WAMU.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Until then, next time, we'll see you on Thursday. Thanks for listening. I'm Sasha Ann Simons.
The Kojo Namdi Show is produced by Julie Deppenbrock, Sydney Grannon, Margaret Barthel, Lauren Marco, and Maura Curry. Our managing producer is Mona Cashby. Our engineer is Josephine Neonai. Our intern is Laura Spitalniak. For past shows and more content, visit kojoshow.org.
Thanks for listening to The Kojo Namdi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.